The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show. Presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. And today we are wrapping up the best of the Kist and Solak recap shows from the 2019 Philadelphia Eagles season. If you're late to the party, how this works is each week the KNS is on reaction duty for Eagles games, and we give our thoughts and analysis after each one. And what I've done is I've taken the best parts of those shows and clipped them up to what amounts to five different compilations. This, of course, is the fifth installment as we highlight the final games, which are Week 17 against the Giants, where the Eagles officially clinch the division and punch their ticket to the playoffs, and of course the wild card round, where they exited said playoffs against the Seattle Seahawks. A few times throughout the season, Brandon Lee Gauten had to fill in for my usual co-host Benjamin Solak. That's the case here as well for Week 17 when we kick this off. That's technically a BGN radio, and then Solak returns for the wildcard round. But enough qualifying. You've heard these, you've listened to these, you understand the score. Let's get to the show.
Week 17, Philadelphia 34, New York Giants 17.
Eagles have won the NFC East. They are the NFC East champions after beating the New York Giants 34-17 in a game where pretty much everybody died. Everyone was injured. Just an absurd game. Close for a while. Dallas wins. It does not matter. The Eagles are crowned the NFC East champs. They're going to the playoffs. Brother, BGN Radio episode 99. How you doing, BLG?
What's going on, Bleeding Green Nation? Do you like those Eagles, baby?
You're watching the earlier games and you see the Dolphins upset the Patriots. And then you see the Packers and the 3-11-1 David Blau-led Lions take the Packers to the limit because Aaron Rodgers has a horrendous start, among other factors. And you get like that any given Sunday type of vibe from all the 1 o'clock games as you head into this win. This one had my nerves jumping, and me and Ben were pretty nervous about this one all week. We definitely didn't see this as a gimme game. And then we find out Zach Ertz is not only out for the game, but perhaps the season with a broken rib and lacerated kidney. But again, on the road, divisional opponent that's been playing better over the last 2 weeks against an Eagles team that's all types of banged up and then lacking weapons and missing key players. And I don't know how you could feel good about this one coming into it. And the game starts, and the first thing that happens is Boston Scott muffs the kickoff and the Eagles start at their own 7-yard line. You're like, here we go. Like, this is how it starts. And throughout the game, Miles Sanders, who's playing really well in the first drive, had like 45 combined yards really early in the game in the first quarter. He goes out with an ankle. Brandon Brooks gets hurt on an extra point or whatever it was with the shoulder. Zach Ertz, you know, Lane Johnson, DeSean Jackson's out for the season. Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, Nelson Agholor, like all these different guys. Like, there's nobody there. You had the stat from Ruben Frank saying that the Eagles had over 200 yards of offense from guys that were on the practice squad throughout the season. That's over half of the total yardage they had in this game. They had 400 total yards. That's wild. And Carson Wentz, 23 for 40, 289, one touchdown, throwing to guys like Boston Scott, throwing to guys like Deontay Burnett and Robert Davis and Josh Perkins. Like, you can't say enough about the resilience of this team when the chips are down. This is 2 years in a row that they're 3 years in a row. I mean, who wins a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback? This is 3 years in a row Doug has pulled his team from the abyss, from desperation, and gotten them to the playoff. It's absurd, man.
Well, on one hand, it's almost like, hey, guys, would be nice if you didn't always have to wait until your backs were literally against the wall and there was like no margin for error to do this, you know? Yeah. Like, it would be nice to kind of just dominate. Like, that's the goal, I feel like. But yeah, I mean, oh my God, you can't say enough. Like, things about like heart and effort can be so overrated in sports. I feel like we talk about that a lot, probably here on BGN Radio.
And momentum. Show.
And momentum. But like, this is just like gutty, man. This is hard to lose those guys. And then like, there were guys who were just dropping out of the game who didn't necessarily, you know, have to get like carted off like Brooks did, but like Brandon Graham has to come out at one point. Like Maddox has to come out.
Yep.
Craig James, who's right. Like, how's he? He's not even playing. How is he getting hurt? Like, everyone's dropping like flies.
Jordan Howard wasn't even healthy for this game. Like, he was active, but there was one running back at the end of the game there, because it was very clear that they weren't going to play Howard, which is super weird why they dressed him. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, Howard had, I think, like one snap or two. Like, maybe he had the one on the big Bob Davis reception that got called back by a penalty.
Right.
But yeah, so he was barely in the game. So they're riding Boston Scott, who, again, was not on the team in week one. Carson Wentz, you cannot say enough about this man. You guys were mocking, and in a good way. You're right, too. I'm not mocking you for mocking people, but you were talking about like the whole elevate thing just a couple weeks ago. He has freaking done that with this team. Now, Doug Peterson has helped. It's not literally all just Carson, but like, at the crux of it, you're paying Carson Wentz $128 million to be your franchise quarterback, and he has been just that. That is, Mike, that is part of what makes this run here so exciting. It's not just about the season. Like, they've answered long-term questions that were being raised, you know, after that Dolphins loss. Like, is Doug the right coach ultimately? Yeah. You know, it wasn't like they're going to get rid of him after this year, but do they need to adjust the staff? And then, you know, where do we go from there? It was like, is Doug just a product of Frank Reich for this, you know, second year in a row? Is Carson Wentz, you know, better than Nick Foles? Like, that's done. Finito. Yeah. In the words of Pat Shermer, who's probably going to be fired. It's like, that's over.
But can you imagine for Carson Wentz, who, by the way, over 4,000 yards, the first Eagles quarterback to do that.
And the first one to do it without having a 500-yard wide receiver.
Right.
Never.
which is crazy. And that's exactly goes to my point. Can you imagine the week one starting lineup? We're at the point where none of them, DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Agholor, Miles Sanders was the starter for that game. You could even count Jordan Howard based on his health for this game. And then Zach Ertz has none of them available to him by at some point in this week 17 game. If Nelson doesn't regress, if Alshon isn't banged up for the entire season, if DeSean doesn't go out for the end, if one of those things, just one of them happens, what does this season look like for Carson Wentz? Do you get more stable play? Do you get even better numbers that you had? You're obviously going to have more wins because of the game winning drops early on in the season. Like, that doesn't get talked about enough, but then we don't have to talk about it because he takes this ragtag group and takes them to the playoffs on his back. Game that we were worried about because the Giants had put up a combined 77 points over the previous two games, and the Eagles are able to get some key turnovers in some key spots. Brother, that play by Malcolm Jenkins to strip it out with Fletcher Cox recovering it, like, that was the moment. On the low snap, Cox recovers it at the New York Giant 2. Boston Scott punches it in. Sidney Jones would not be denied. He has made three big plays for this team, two big breakups, one on third down against the Giants and on fourth down against the Cowboys, and he gets an interception in this game. Just a great performance. I mean, the Giants on the first four drives only had 13 plays for 20 yards, and I know they busted in just typical Eagles fashion. Like, BLG, what was going through your mind when the Eagles go up 17-10 on the back of a 9-play, 62-yard, 3-minute drive? You got the over-the-shoulder boulder holder to Dallas Goedert on 3rd and 8. What a crazy catch. The Boston Scott 7-yard touchdown. And immediately the Giants answer with a 68-yard touchdown scamper to make it 17-17. What was your confidence level at that point?
It was shaken, Mike, Michael, just because I know you just saw it on the drive before, like how it takes that Dallas Goedert catch, how it takes like Deontay Burnett making a play, or I have my drive screwed up. I don't know. But
that was the next one. In any case,
so like it takes like plays like that just to, you know, it takes a lot of effort, basically, is what I'm trying to say, for the Eagles to score. And then like the Giants, it's just, Saquon's down the field. It's easy. That's not what the Eagles are able to do with what they have.
Right.
And to their credit, the Eagles are able to go on these drives, like seemingly unsustainably in theory, but but they are sustaining it each week. I don't know how, but they are doing it. It's not even that I lost faith in the team as a whole as much as just, you know, the style they have to play. It's like, well, you know, now they're okay. They're going to have to do another drive. And if it doesn't work, or, you know, if they get set back, God forbid, by like a holding penalty or, you know, like a sack or something,
right,
you know, it's hard for them to overcome it. They're not overcoming like 3rd and 16 because no one's getting open.
Yep.
They don't have the horses really to do that. The pressure was getting there. I feel like for a good chunk of the game, they had 4 sacks.
Derek Barnett hit 2 beautiful spin moves in this game, had a key sack.
Your guy, Brandon, your favorite player.
I got to give him credit, man. And Brandon Graham had himself a day, man, a real day.
Now, you know, Maddox gets banged up in this game, and obviously Darby's out of the lineup, and then Jalen Mills didn't play in this game. So Strap basically only got some more playing time because there's injuries, and he was awesome. He had multiple stops on like 3rd downs. He had the 4th down stop on Saquon. He was awesome in this game. And it's amazing because it's like deja vu from last year. Like the Eagles claimed him off waivers out of nowhere, and Strap is like making all these plays, and it's like, who is this guy? And he's doing it again. And then now you have the offensive version this year with Boston Scott, who again deserves a lifetime contract. Like, it's just amazing. So for all the crap I give the personnel staff, people deserve credit for that. Yeah, I think so much of like the next man thing can be kind of overrated, because at some point, like, you can't literally just put anyone in there.
There's no
like,
more men.
You need some baseline. Like, yeah, it's not even like the next man. It's like the next man at this point. And like for Joshua Perkins to be catching a touchdown like that, it's like, what are we doing here? Like, this is insane. How is this team going to the playoffs?
While Boston Scott doesn't have like the greatest yards per carry, he also has like 3 touchdowns. The guy had 138 combined yards, four receptions, 84 yards on top of 54 rushing yards on 19 carries. Joshua Perkins has 50 yards and a touchdown. Deontay Burnett has 48 yards. Greg Ward has 6 catches for 43 yards. Was a good target for Wentz, who Wentz it's looking like he has a lot more trust in him now as the season has gone along. Robert Davis had a great catch that was wiped out by the Halapuli Vaitai hold. Vaitai kind of struggled in this game, but then you get Wentz on the hoof later, and look, I'm a big fan of letting the Bronco buck.
LTBB.
And you get him on the move, and you let Wentz, you know, have some time out there in space and find guys downfield. And he was able to do this and give these guys chances. He threw the touchdown to Perkins, which made it 10-3. Then when it was, you know, 17-7, you know, or 17-17, Wentz finds Robert Davis down the field, wiped out by that hole. But then, you know, later on, he finds Deontay Burnett. These are real players making real plays for the Eagles in week 17 that would set up a clutch 50-yard field goal from Jake Elliott to make it 20-17 with 13:58 left in the fourth. The Eagles would not relinquish the lead. I think they're playing with house money now. Like, I don't think you can be disappointed if this team goes like 1-and-done. We don't know the status of Brandon Brooks and Miles Sanders, obviously, but they're going to be depleted. You know, you're not getting Deshaun Jackson back next week. You can't get him back until the divisional round anyway. Is this legit house money for you? And what do you think of the chances for the Eagles moving forward? Because, I mean, I don't think it really matters if they're playing, you know, whoever they're playing in the playoffs, but what do you think about the Eagles in the playoffs moving forward?
I think I'm finding myself where I kind of was last year, where you reach a certain point with this team where it's like, how could you doubt them? Like, how? how could you possibly doubt them? Because right. Every time you do, and I certainly did when they lost to the Dolphins, I said they effing suck, because they did at the time. And I think they deserved a lot of guff they got back then, obviously. I mean, they've shocked us really at every turn. But at the same time, it's not like just a fluke. Like, that's the point of this. Like, the way this team has continued to overcome adversity is more than fluky. Like, there's something to that. It's, you want to talk about culture? That's the culture right there, is being able to overcome adversity and resiliency. So it's incredible. I would not count this team out. Again, they've won 4 games in a row going into the playoffs. When you look at it on paper, yeah, obviously you're like, okay, how the heck are they going to overcome not having Zach Ertz potentially for the rest of the season and whatever happens with Brandon Brooks and then even Miles Sanders? Like, I get it from that sense of like, you don't feel amazing about it conceptually.
Every week I ask for 3 words to describe the game from the listeners, from Danny Thompson. Wentz is clutch. I mean, that's something that we were talking about for the past couple of years. Can Wentz get it done in the big moments, you know, the game-winning drives, when the division's on the line, in the big push games, because he had struggled earlier on in the season when a lot was at stake. You look at the New England game, you look at the Seattle game, the earlier Dallas game. But then he puts together some wins against divisional opponents. You know, they beat up on Dallas and are able to get to this point. It's nice to know, at the very least, that the quarterback, I mean, I think we can finally settle this, is not the problem on the Eagles. All of the doubters have gone away in the last few weeks as Carson has, you know, risen that tide in all those boats. The Eagles already won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. Like, we're already through the looking glass. Things have already been weird. This is the NFL. Anything can happen, man.
I had the poll up on bleedinggreennation.com about that at the time, an article after the Dolphins game, and everyone's emotional here, so I'm not holding everyone to this. I get it. Everyone's really frustrated, but I put up a poll. Do you want the Eagles to make the playoffs? And 34% of the voters here with 3,610 voting said yes. So only 34% said yes. So 66% said no. People didn't even want to make the playoffs.
I'm sorry.
I know. And I understood it at the point, because you thought, okay, maybe they can make it, but what's the point? Like, they're not going to do anything. That is absolutely not the way to be feeling now. And even if they were one and done, when you talk about house money, this concept, I mean, it's going to be disappointing anytime they lose in the playoffs. But the fact that they've made it this far and they've prevented the Cowboys from being the first team since the Eagles last did it in 2004 to repeat as NFC champions, I think that says something. Again, going towards the future, it's just such a sign of hope. It's like, you answered the big questions about Doug and about Carson. And I still have some questions about Howie, but he obviously deserves some credit for this team and having the depth to get to the playoffs.
I think a big thing for me is that this is now Carson Wentz's team. This is no longer the question of living in Nick Foles' shadow or anything like that. This has, by way of devastating injuries and the amount of them and to the specific, you know, skilled players, this is Carson's team now. Not every year is running back one, running back two, like RT1, RG1, wide receiver 1, 2, 3, so on and so forth. That's not going to, you aren't going to have those injuries every single year. You put a solid, consistent supporting cast around Carson Wentz, and I think you're going to see big time results. I mean, Carson Wentz could have played at the same level he's played at pretty much all year, and if he had better playmakers around him, not dropping the deep balls and the game winning touchdowns and everything like that, he wouldn't have to change anything. He would have had a great season. The whole narrative around him would have changed, because that's worth 2 or 3 wins. You know, it's not 9-7 is fine, but you know, you're talking about 11-5 now, 12-4. I think that's what this team is consistently capable of when you have a quarterback that can allow you to be in any game. And I think it's huge for Carson's confidence moving forward as well, to know that, like, I don't have to press. Like, I it's not all on me. I can be a facilitator. I can put it on the other guys, because they're going to come pick me up when I need them.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis, because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Wild card round. Seattle 17, Philadelphia 9.
The Eagles season is over. You are not flying high, but you are on the Kissed and Solak Show, episode 168. Brought to you by SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. I'm your host, Michael Kissed. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kissed NFL. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game for our last reaction show of the 2019-2020 NFL season. He is Benjamin Solak. Ben, it wasn't exactly the playoff experience that we were looking for with Carson Wentz, but it was an exhausting experience nonetheless. How you doing, brother?
Everything is sad. It's delicious, but it's a sad delicious. I feel like we ran a marathon. Like, that game was exhausting. Just watching the Eagles try to desperately eke out like every single yard of offense they could out of the Josh McCown led six sack Philadelphia Eagle offense. Right, watching the running game just slam their heads into heavy boxes on third downs when the Eagles are just trying to string together a couple of big plays, watching the defense just blitz the living daylights out of Russell Wilson, praying that they could get pressure on him. I mean, it was a hard, long, and difficult watch, and it was awfully soured by the absence of Carson Wentz, who just, you don't even know what to say at this point. It's terrible. It's terrible that a player would play that well in 2017, go down with injury, watch his team go to the playoffs, win the playoffs, win the Super Bowl. Watch him come back in 2018, struggle with health, eventually go down at the end of the season, and then watch the team come back, make it the playoffs, win a playoff game. And then he finally gets his team to the end of the regular season, and he gets six snaps before it's taken away by just like an awful, terrible, avoidable play. I cannot imagine what that's like mentally for Carson. And he's got to spend now a third consecutive offseason, not necessarily in rehab, but sitting, working out, and preparing for a season once again, like with this massive monkey on his back, in terms of proving screw injury prone. He has nothing to prove in terms of whether or not he's injury prone, whether or not he's physical. None of that is real. None of that matters. No interest to me, and has no bearing on the Jadeveon Clowney play whatsoever. But having to prove that he can not only take a team to the playoffs, but be a consistently good quarterback for 20 games in a season. Because even though we have no evidence to the contrary, we have no evidence to the point, because he hasn't been able to put it together yet. And that is a dark and heavy cloud.
And I have asked before, does Carson Wentz start to believe like that he's a bit snake bitten? And you add this into this to where he has to think about it for the entire offseason. And it's devastating. This specific play, and you already alluded to this, that it doesn't fit into the injury prone narrative. And you can say he's injury prone if you want. Even after a full regular season, if you're basing it on his past, whatever, I don't care. They're just words. They don't matter. I just don't think this has anything remotely to do with that. And I think it's square pegging a round hole, told you so nonsense from a select group of knuckle-dragging, sewage-sucking dipshits that are pushing the narrative that getting hit by a car makes you a magnet. The story is an Eagles team that yet again found the next man up and found a way to stay in the game to a point where it was a 4-point game within 8:46 left in the third quarter, to where it's a one score game. It's a 17-9 final. They were within 8 points. They had two critical fourth downs that they were not able to convert. I agree with Doug on going for them, which we can talk about. But this whole thing, staying in this game the way that they did and the way that they fought and the way that they ended the season over the last month plus.
Right. The question I ask myself is like, if you're calling the game, you would want to be able to hypothesize to the listeners and viewers, what should they expect from the Eagles now that, you know, you lose your starting quarterback? What's the plan? My plan was Greg Ward, which is like mostly for fun. But like, honestly, I thought like would have been a good plan. What you saw from McCown, they had a lot of out-breaking stuff with him, right? I mean, tight ends, 12 to 15 yards outside. McCown had a live arm. He had some pop to it. You said he's throwing with the force of 1,000 suns there. He was slinging a pill around the yard a little bit. Seahawks did very much so what they were trying to do in the first game, which is they're just going to take away your in-breaking stuff. They have those two really good linebackers that talked about sinking underneath all those intermediate breaking routes. So throw outside against leverage. So I thought the Eagles did a good job with that, with McCown. They were definitely, I think, got too conservative play calling with McCown and had to get out of that. I think they did a better job in the fourth quarter, even coming out in the third with a couple passes. Yeah. When they first put McCown in the second, they were like, all right, we're running the ball and calling screens. Like, we're scared. A lot of their runs in the first half were setting up play action rollouts. They were running jet motion constantly. They were running just traditional wide zone. So you were looking for split zone rollouts, and you were looking for three level flood off of a weak boot. And that's where Carson was going to be successful. With McCown, for whatever reason, because McCown's not a bad athlete, we saw him keep a zone read for 11 yards. Yeah. But they didn't want him doing that. And that was a problem because McCown's pocket presence has been booty. Like when he was young, it was booty. You know what I mean? Like this isn't like an old guy thing. The other thing about McCown, which was a big deal, was that he drastically limited the Eagles in the red zone. And he limited the Eagles in the red zone because he's not a quick processor. He's a slow processor who needs to do work pre-snap. So the Eagles couldn't throw guys wrong in the red zone. They had to get into the looks they wanted to get into those short areas before the snap. And that's really, really difficult to do. You need to basically guess right. Like, you need to just get the defense in a bad look by happenstance. It's not something you can easily create for yourself. They ran the ball well. They ran the ball well. They got some explosive plays. Matt Pryor, I think, is a good long-term depth piece for this line. I'm really impressed how he plays in the interior. Sanders had a good game running the ball. Scott had a good game running the ball. That went according to plan. Only so much your running offense can do for you when it's Josh McCown throwing to Shelton Gibson. You're kind of hogtied there as far as it goes.
Yeah, the big pass interference drawn by Shelton Gibson, a.k.a. the best deep threat on the Eagles, apparently, in this game. But Josh McCown, 18 for 24, 174. I mean, he had a respectable game. They got Miles Sanders out in the flat. Zach Ertz, you know, does his job on the rub route and whatnot, and the defender's late getting over. I thought McCown was a little bit late on the throw. The throw was on the back hip, not out in front, a little bit low. Miles Sanders also should have caught it as well. Plenty of blame to pass around, but I don't think the blame lands on the coaching staff on this one. I thought it was a good decision. In a must-win game, you got exactly what you wanted. Execution was just lacking a little bit from, you know,
right.
You got your backup quarterback in there, and your rookie running back drops it.
This is an 8-point ball game. It ain't right. Like this is like 4 or 5 or 2 field goals, does it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is an 8-point ball game. You score a field goal, you still need a touchdown to do anything. Obviously, you don't need the 2-point conversion. You'll take the lead, but you still have to get into the end zone. And the thing is, with this team and with McCown's red zone limitations, you don't expect to get into the end zone easily. So you have to take every shot you can when you're close.
Yep.
I thought 4th and 4 was the right call. Obviously 4th and 7 was the right call. And I thought play design wise, when they came out, Trey to the right, Nub tight end with the back to that side. I mean, everybody and their mama knew running back swing. Then, you know, they came out in the same formation on the next one. Obviously they ran the flare. It was the flat route, but they've been doing that running back to the open field, swinging him into space. Jadeveon Clowney ends up being the drop player because of how Seattle's rushing. Great right. news. If you're able to put that ball over Clowney, which is the ideal placement for that throw, touchdown. McCown goes behind, and Sanders feels like he has to catch it while accelerating to make sure Clowney misses him, probably trying to make sure he picks up that first down. Can't blame him for it. It's a tough catch. The throw location is a debate, and then, you know, it ends up being a drop. So inches of execution, miles of results. You know what I mean? That's kind of, we know the Eagles are prone to high leverage drops this year.
Metcalf ends up with 160 receiving yards, the most by a rookie in a playoff game in the Super Bowl era. Aww. Obviously has the 53-yard touchdown, which is around midfield, which we told you about on the preview shows. Pre-snap motion looked like a bust, and it looked like another case of the Eagles having issues adjusting their coverage to that motion. It was just, I don't know what exactly the coverage they were trying to run, but it looked weird. It's been an issue for them all season. And of course, DK ends up eating them up for the majority of the game and has the, you know, cover zero at the end of the game, throw it up. And based on the rules that the Eagles had in coverage, either first in, first out, or whatever the rules were, Marcus Epps draws DK Metcalf in coverage, which, let me tell you, we know exactly how that's going to end up. So they're able to close the game out that way.
Here's the thing about running a cover zero blitz on 3rd and 10 with one timeout left with the game and the season on the line. It just doesn't seem like a great idea, Mike.
They gave up so many situations, 2nd and 15, 3rd and 15, all these different situations, and somehow they managed to blow them in the most frustrating ways, Ben.
It was throw the kitchen sink at Wilson. Collinsworth did a good job identifying, you know, Jenkins would be in coverage over Hollister, be a QB spy over Russ, and would occasionally free blitz when he knew he had an alley, force right. the issue. The Eagles very clearly were going to do everything they could to move Russell Wilson off his spot and to keep him off tempo. Now,
and it's something that worked for them in week 12. It's something right. we talked about in the preview show. We saw it, and it was effective at certain spots.
You've been blitzing more consistently all season than you ever have yeah. before.
Yep, 19th in blitz frequency, which is way higher than Schwartz has been in the past few years.
Right. So then now this is what you need to generate this pressure. Okay, well then you're coming with heat, and you're coming with heat, and you're coming with 6, you're coming with 5. Man coverage on the back end, you're getting 3rd and 10 completions, 19 yards to Malik Turner on a dig route. Yeah, he's going to snap off your slot corner. Maddox and LeBlanc are good players, but they lose. You got Metcalf, 53-yard touchdown on a 2nd and long. Play action shot, right where Seattle likes to take their play action shots. You yep. rotate the safety down, you're in cover zero. You know, so all of this to say, they're doing it. Occasionally, they're getting the sacks and the hits necessary to stop drives. They're clearly tightening up when they get to the red zone as well. They have a blocked field goal, you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
You get to 3rd and 10, and you finally arrived at the play in which a sack doesn't really actually make anything better
right.
than an incompletion. It
yeah,
doesn't.
It's the same thing.
Right. You still
it's like
have
6 yards of field position. It doesn't
one
matter.
Timeout. Seahawks will still be punting from deep in their own territory. You'll still be getting the ball back with basically the same amount of time. You have finally arrived at the play in which it is just as good to get an incompletion as it is to get a sack in terms of game scripting.
And you sell out.
And you end up
with Marcus Epps on DK Metcalf.
And not only do you bring the house, you so clearly are bringing the house.
Right.
And Marcus Epps like does not even know. And like Cravon LeBlanc's gonna be like, get the over here. We're 2-for-3 right now. Yeah. We need you in man coverage. Please come here. You third-string safety we picked up from the Minnesota Vikings after we cuffed Anderson Dejo, cover DK Metcalf. We need you.
Yeah. By the way, you're reading 3 and you're also checking 2 for vertical and you're taking 2 vertical. Like, all that information is being disseminated to him as he's coming over.
Yeah, we finally got to the play to run picket fence. We finally arrived. That's what's just amazing. Is like we know with Schwartz and end of game situations, situationally, he just makes the weirdest decisions at the ends of halves. Just perplexing. You ask Danny Kennel. Kennel? Canal? Yeah,
Oh boy.
Right? Then Carson Wentz just has a soft brain. This is the take. He was like, not all brains are the same. Thank you, Daniel.
Every brain is a snowflake. That's what we got out of that.
is a snowflake. Did I love this season? No. But like at the end of the day, hard fought last December and hard fought game in January against a good Seahawks team. Seahawks team that was a pass interference call away from being the third seed in the NFC. From being the division champion in NFC West.
Can you imagine thinking we'd be here after the Miami Dolphins
loss? Right, exactly. What if I told you, you know? Who's more likely to get fired? Mike or Jim Schwartz on 3. After 3. 1, 2, 3, name. 1, 2, 3, Mike
Rowe. Wow, okay.
Okay, so we're there. Jimbo's not getting fired. This defense is really good at home. And half of your games are at home. And so this defense is really good half of the time. And so we'll survive. It would be nice if we got some new players for the defensive back 7, though, maybe. Just as a hypothetical. Just as a something. Just as an I don't know. Just as, you know, a potential. Just maybe, for sure.
If you didn't have a good time during Houston and Buffalo, you don't have a damn pulse. Because that was some of the most electrifying, both good and bad quarterbacking I've ever seen on planet Earth. That was amazing. Let me tell you right now,
Seahawks-Green Bay is going to be a fun football game. And if we get ourselves some snow... Listen, Seahawks and Green Bay have met a lot in the playoffs over the last decade or so, and they've been fun games. That's going to be a hoot and a holler. I hope Minnesota gets pantsed by San Francisco, and I very much expect them to. Would not enjoy Vikings in the NFC Championship game again. So, on that. No one even knows what anything is, because Jacob Hollister, like, tapped Malcolm Jenkins on the head and got called for OPI, which, like, really didn't have the same impact on the play or the game, obviously.
I agree.
Nobody knows what's real. Everything is stupid. Josh McCown threw a ball that didn't even land in the screen, and Trey Flowers got called for defensive pass interference on Greg Ward. I have no idea what this penalty is. Every penalty that gets addressed during the offseason by the referees gets more confusing in the subsequent season. It was a heck of a ride. I left it all out there. I know that much. I had a really great time playing for the Eagles.
Is that McCown?
Yes, and it's in my face, it's in my eyes, it's in my nose. Okay.
It's gonna cry.
We're gonna be here. We hope that you stick with us as well. If you've enjoyed the show over the season, go ahead, rate, review, and subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcasts. If you have things you'd like to hear in the off season, we always love to open up this call, and I'm sure we'll do it more formally in the next upcoming episodes. But if you have stuff you want to hear in the off season, if you have stuff you want to see in the off season, we're always available. The DMs are open. The ats are there on Twitter at Benjamin Solak, at Michael Kist NFL. Let us know, and we want to do that to you. That's what they pay us the bigs. That's what they pay us the big bucks for, is to do those things for you guys. So that would make us very happy. We hope it would make you happy as well. For the final post-game time this season, he's been Michael Kist. I've been Benjamin Solak. We appreciate you listening, and we will catch you in the middle of the week.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
G-N.